joining us today for the Fair Loss of You podcast. We're going to be talking about everything related to fair trade fashion, including sustainability, ethics, human trafficking, our artisans, and keeping kids in school. My name is Jackie Costello, and I own the Golden Rule Boutique, an all fair trade boutique based in San Diego. My co-host is Jen Parlin, and she is a fair trade partner with Threads Worldwide based in Connecticut.
In this episode, Jackie spends some time with Brandy Voth, founder of The Power Project, and a mentor for women who have escaped sex trafficking in the U.S. I hope you find this conversation as powerful and inspiring as we did.
Hi, Brandy. Thank you so much for being on our podcast. I love how we met on Rachel Hollis's Made for More group on Facebook. I think that's so funny, but of course, she's creating good connections, right? But I'm so glad that you were able to hop on an interview. I think our listeners are really going to learn a lot. Could you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Sure. And for starters, Jackie, thank you for having me. Thank you for inviting me on. It's kind of fun in the podcast world because I am accustomed at this point in life to being the one asking the questions. So when I flip the script and I'm the one on the receiving end of the questions, it's always an interesting situation to be put in. It's kind of fun. So my name is Brandy Voth, and I am the founder of The Power Project. And like you said, we got connected through a Facebook group, which I love Facebook groups. Like, I am an OG of Facebook groups. Before they were trendy, I was like, let's put everyone in a group and let's talk. The Power Project itself, we're an online community, and our whole mission is to inspire women to lead purpose-filled lives and truly own their power, their God-given power that is unique to them. So, and you and I were connected because I teach a class at an aftercare home for traffic survivors. So that's one of my passion projects. It's something that I really, really enjoy doing. And so I had been at a class, and the girls came in and said, "Hey, have you read this book, Girl Wash Your Face?" Which was really it was really cute to me because I had donated that book back in the very beginning when I read it. I was like, look, the girls that I mentor that are, you know, traffic survivors, they need to read this. They need to hear, you know, that they can quit making excuses and lies and letting themselves down. And so I said, yeah, I said, you know, I donated that book to the library. You know, what's your favorite part of it? And she said, you know, in the first part of that book, the author says that you wouldn't lie to your friends and make excuses to your friends and let them down. So why would you lie to yourself? And she said, no one has ever put it that way to me. And I'm going to, you know, at 40 years old, I'm going to quit making excuses and lies to myself. So yeah, so I shouted that little like story out in the Facebook group that we're in because I thought this is really cool. And I want to share this with other people that will get kind of the importance of it. And then you're like, yo, let's do an interview.
Because it was so perfect. That's actually one of that little blurb that she brought up is one of my favorite parts of that book too, because it's so true. It's like, you wouldn't cancel on a friend, you wouldn't, you know, just bail on them. Why do we keep doing it to ourselves?
Yeah,
you know? So I love that piece too. And then of course, once you said that you are mentoring these women, I was like, yes, we need you, Brandy. Because we talk a lot on our podcasts, I mean, obviously about ethical and fair trade fashion, but we're talking about what it prevents, you know, and it prevents human trafficking. That's one of the things that is really close to Jen and my hearts, who's the co-host who you didn't get to meet today. But So how did you start mentoring these women, and how did you get involved and started?
So this was not something that has been on my heart my whole life. This was not something I sought out. Like, literally, this cause found me. And long story short, I was in Australia on a business trip. I have a skincare franchise that funds all of these passion projects for me. And so I was launching in Australia, and we were over there doing some business trainings and launch events, and I saw some billboards about human trafficking, immigrants being targeted, slavery, modern day slavery, and it just really like caught my eye. Then I saw some posters in the airport about missing children being targeted for trafficking. And in my mind's eye, I thought, wow, you know, Australia is a shady place. Like, that was literally my take on it. Thought, man, I can't believe they have such a problem with human trafficking here. And I was in a place where I was really seeking out, like, what is my purpose, right? Like, I know how to make money. I know how to sell products. I know how to coach a team. But, like, what is my purpose? What's the bigger cause that I serve? And so I was leaning into that. I was open to receive this at that time. And so when I came home, it just really was on my heart. Like, it was keeping me up at night, like thinking. And it was kind of like when you buy a white car, all of a sudden you see white cars everywhere. I started seeing it in my Facebook feed. I started seeing it on the local news. I started seeing like billboards, and I was like, what is this human trafficking thing? And so I just started researching. I'm like, literally any question you have can be answered by Google. So I just started Googling, and and it was really just laid on my heart that I was meant to be involved with this cause. So I sought out some organizations locally, and I had no idea what it looked like or why I was being brought into this cause, because I've lived a really comfortable life. I've not endured any type of abuse, and I wasn't sure that I had the skill set to even empathize with victims and survivors of trafficking. So I found an aftercare home locally that cares for sexually exploited and trafficked women over the age of 18. And I knew it was on my heart from the get-go that I was meant to be working with survivors in the restoration piece. I knew that it wasn't a frontline ministry that I was being called to. And there are organizations that are serving that cause, but I knew that wasn't for me. And I personally, like, I love working with women. I love coaching women. I love helping women gain confidence and really see themselves as they were created, for the purpose they were created for. So yeah, I found this house. I got involved with it. I reached out. I went to like a community awareness event. I plugged into a local coalition that is about 42 different organizations. And
oh wow,
yeah. So I work with a few different organizations, but the aftercare home where I mentor survivors, I teach a weekly class. It's a business class and teaches them about attaching to purpose and being able to work in any area that you are in and still be able to serve your purpose and your calling. And so that's, I've been involved with them for this all, let's see, 2018, I believe, January 2018, I started teaching a class there. And then I've been able to go on to continue to serve as a mentor to the graduates after they finish the program and move back home. I've got girls all over the United States that I get to chat with and talk to and see their success stories, and also, you know, be a shoulder when they need someone to talk to when it's a little tough.
That's amazing. So, are these, how do you help these women find their purpose? Because that's kind of the, you know, the basis, right? So how do you direct that a little bit?
So that's my jam. Like, that's my favorite thing. It's my favorite thing to wax on poetically about, because we've created this buzz, right? And for a long time it was like, I don't know about you, but I was always told like, find your why. Well, let's be completely honest. Like, my why for starting a business was to make some more money, right? So I firmly believe that your why and your purpose are two different things. Like, your why is what drives you to do something, but your purpose is utilizing the talents and the gifts that you were given to serve others in whatever form, fashion, capacity that looks like. So basically, one way that I'm kind of helping them along the way of finding their purpose, because you don't have to go out and search for it. It's not an external thing. It's internal. It comes down to getting really nitty-gritty with yourself about who you are It comes down to recognizing your talents and your strengths. It comes down to learning how you serve others. Are you a communicator? Are you a connector? Are you a servant? What is it that you uniquely do well with others? Because every one of us has something.
Are you doing like a strength finders test? Like how exactly are you helping them figure that out?
So we walk through a course, which is a business course, and the business course helps them recognize their talents, recognize their strengths, learn to set goals, learn to plan. And then I am like, hey, let's do the Enneagram. Let's find out what number you are, and let's do a strength finder test. And then also let's talk to other people in the house and find out, because most of the time we don't recognize our talents and our gifts that are given to us,
totally. But
someone else can be like, hey, you're really good at speaking with people. You're really good at, mm-hmm. at providing, you know, a shoulder when they need a shoulder. So I tell them, I'm like, look, ask around in this house. You're in a safe house. You're in a community of people that are working towards the same thing as you. Talk to one another and see what you're good at. So I have a gal that just yesterday we were talking about, what's your dream job? Because they've never been given permission to dream. And yeah. They have a lot of obstacles and a lot of roadblocks between whatever dreams they had long ago. And that looks like felony offenses. That looks like addiction and recovery. That looks like not having custody of their children. It looks like a whole string of things. But it doesn't mean that that dream has disappeared. It's just been clouded with the life and the trauma. So as we're digging in and I'm saying, what is your dream job? What did you tell me? I don't care what it is. You want to be a rock star? Like whatever. Let's put it down. What do you want to do? And one of the girls said, I don't know what my dream career is. I'm a really hard worker. I show up. I do my job. She said, but I do know that I want to serve others. I want to help traffic survivors. I want to help the homeless. But I know there's not really money in that. And I'm like, You're right. Nobody's paying me to come teach this class, but that's part of my purpose, right? That fuels my soul. So, you know, I've got her now connected with another organization that goes out and builds relationships with homeless people on the streets. And so in a couple of weeks, we'll go and we'll hang out like I did last Thursday with this organization, and she'll be able to learn to serve, because I think when we decide that our purpose, we don't necessarily always make a career out of our purpose, but we can serve our purpose in our career, if that makes sense. I hope that's coming across right. But whatever gifts and talents we have, we can serve in whatever role we're placed in life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I love that you start with the Enneagram. I know Rachel Hollis, of course, talks about it all the time, but I was just on a retreat. Do you know Emily Sexton? I'm not sure
Yes. If
you know who she is.
I mean,
is.
I don't know her personally, well, but yes, I know who she is.
Right. I just went. She is with the Flourish Market. She's the founder of the Flourish Market. And I just went on her retreat in Nashville this past weekend. And one of the things everyone was in our introductions was talking about their Enneagram numbers. And I'm like, I have no idea what this is. I've really never even heard of it. That's so funny that everyone else is like, oh, I'm a seven, I'm an eight, I'm a with a wing two. And I'm like, what is this? So I love that you brought that up. That's so funny.
I'll tell you why I love it. And I know it's a buzzword right now. I know it's like everyone's talking about the Enneagram, like they're, you know, like guys are growing out hipster beards. I get it. But it was one of those things that I've always loved, like a strength finder test. I'm really acutely aware of what I'm good at and where I fail at in life. But the Enneagram just kind of gave me permission to say I was created this way for a reason. Like, I'm too much for a lot of people. I am not for everyone. And that's okay. Because the ones that I'm here for, like, I'm here for. So that's why I really enjoy the Enneagram. It says, like, you were created this way for a reason, to serve the purpose that only you can uniquely serve.
I love that. That's one of my my things that I've had to grow into recently. You know, I'm not everyone's cup of tea. Not everybody likes tea, you know, like I think there's a saying about peaches, you know, like you might be the juiciest peach on the planet, but not everybody likes peaches.
Right.
You know? And that's okay.
Yeah.
But I'd like to shift gears a little. Could you tell me like what the most shocking thing that you have learned about either human trafficking or sex trafficking, or it could be from one of these women. It could be, you know, just in general that you haven't known before this.
Yeah. So when I first got involved with the fight, I really had to, like, I had to get my heart right. And I had to have some deep conversations with the man upstairs about just allowing me to serve in this capacity and still sleep at night without nightmares. Because it's dark, it's heavy.
Yeah.
And probably the most shocking part of it all is the trade of really young children in the United States and the accessibility of really young children online. The depravity of humanity, because this doesn't look like the movie Taken. It doesn't look like someone being kidnapped and sold into the slave trade. It looks like someone building a relationship with your kid online, and your kid knows this person online, and then grooming your child to trust them, and then entering your child into a life of child pornography and sex trafficking is what it looks like. And that the fact that you can, I mean, Backpage was shut down, which was a major driving factor for the sex trafficking industry. It was based out of Dallas, Texas, and it took years and years and years of legislation to get shut down. But there are other evils that will pop up and fill that place. But I know that at one point it was as easy as ordering a underage girl from Backpage as it was getting a pizza delivered to your house. So,
oh my God,
that's probably just the most shocking aspect of it all is that it doesn't look like anything that we mainstream Americans think it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, so true that it's that easy and it's that accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And since you brought up how heavy it is, how do you keep yourself going?
Prayer, like massive amounts of prayer, meditation. And I had to get to a point because I'm an achiever. Right. So success looks like accomplishing and succeeding and checking the box off and moving to the next level. And it's funny that God put me in this role because I never even dealt well with my friends making poor decisions. Like I was like, you're a moron, make better decisions. Right. So it's funny to be working with people who have consistently made some poor decisions in life. And, so in the beginning, when I wanted to rescue everyone and fix everyone, and I didn't prepare myself for the fact that their success might look different than what my expectations of the success was. So when I went through a place of people leaving the program, people graduating the program and then relapsing, people just the cycle, right? It's the cycle of trauma that they've been through. And I had to go to a mentor of mine, and I'm on the phone. I'm like, what are we doing? Why am I wasting in my mind? Why am I wasting my time away from my kids, yep, my husband, my business? Why am I investing all this time if we're going to get the same outcome? And he said, look, it's not your job to save them. It's your job to be there for them at the time they are placed in your life. It is your job to speak life into them. It is your job to teach them their worth and their value. And whether their success looks like your success or not, hopefully they remember these words and this time they've spent with you. So
yeah,
getting to that place was really crucial for me. And knowing now I can't be attached to, you know, the ideal version of you graduate the program, you stay clean and sober, you never fall into contact with the people that have done bad things to you before, you go on to succeed and work in another aftercare program and volunteer and flourish and get custody of your children again and get married and live happily ever after. Like, I can't be attached to that. I have to say, like yesterday, I have to count the wins. I've got three girls in my class mm-hmm. right now. The odds of all three of those girls graduating the program are slim, just in honest to goodness truth of our statistics. But those three girls at the end of class yesterday thanked me and told me how confident they feel after our class and how I make them dream again and believe that they can do more than they know they can do. So counting those wins, and to answer your question in a roundabout way, viewing success differently is what keeps me going. Viewing the small wins and holding on to them.
I think that's so powerful because we all need that in our life to really count the wins. We always, I mean, as entrepreneurs or as someone starting something new, we always think that we should be that much further than we are. We start comparing, all of those things. So if we're not counting the wins and, you know, celebrating the small achievements, you know, then it gets to be that much harder. So I love that.
Yeah.
We often ask the brands that we're interviewing, you know, their favorite artist and story, because that's typically like who we are interviewing. But I'd love if you could share with us your favorite Survivor story.
So probably I have a lot, but probably my absolute favorite one is that I was before I taught the Purposeful Business class at the house, I was teaching a class over the book Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend. I'm not sure if you've read it. I highly recommend it to anyone. So I went in and I had two girls in the class, and one of them wanted nothing to do with the class or me. She was not happy to be there. She was not happy to be doing the class. And we sat down and just got to know each other. And I said, so what do you think about starting this class and this book? And she's sitting back, you know, like slouched down in the couch. She don't care. Like, she ain't got no time for me. And she said, listen, I ain't never had no boundaries. Nobody ever taught me no boundaries. And it's too late for me to learn boundaries now. And I said, well, that's great, but you're required to do this class for the program. So I'm going to see you next week, and you have to do chapters 1 and 2. So I showed up and I walked into the class, and she was a completely different person. And she said, Miss Brandy, this book is incredible. She said, I hope it's okay. I skipped ahead. I've done more than 2 chapters. I wish I would have had this 20 years ago. It would have saved me so much trouble in life. And so she went on to love the class. And then our program's a 9 to 12 month program in the house. So she was at the end of her program, like approaching graduation. We were going, we were taking the girls shopping for an outfit to wear to the banquet, our annual banquet celebration. And she wanted to ride with me. She asked if she could hop in my car and ride with me. And I said, sure. And she said, I gotta tell you, I had the neatest experience last weekend. And she said, you know how we were going to that retreat? We're going to that church retreat, right? And I said, yeah. She says, and you know, I was really nervous because I got tattoos and I didn't know if these church people were going to judge me. And so I was like, okay. She says, so she had a rose tattoo on one hand, and then she had like a heart with a crown on the other hand, I think. And then she had a cross tattoo. She says, so the first night we were there, they gave me this a rose. It was on our table. And she said, I thought, oh, wow, that rose looks like my rose tattoo. And the second night we were there, They gave us a necklace that had the heart with the crown, and just like my tattoo on this hand. And then the third night we were there, there was a cross, and we put all of our, like, things that we're ashamed of in our life and all of our fears and all of our anxiety and anything that's caused us pain, we wrote it down on papers and we put it on the cross. And she said, you know, right there, I just realized that people can accept me for me and I don't have to feel shame about my past. And so it gave me chills like all over. And I was like, okay, this is restoration, right? This is helping them see themselves as they were created and not the trauma that they've walked through.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I love that story. That's amazing. I think this is my favorite part of doing these interviews, is hearing the artisan stories, hearing, you know, stories of women all over the world, and just understanding how we're all so connected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jen and I talk about this a lot, and it's really why we're so involved. And that's just such a common story. Not the trauma piece,
right?
But you know, we don't have to feel judged by other people. We don't have to feel judged because of our past. I think it's so relatable.
Mm-hmm.
So how are these women in the program? I know you're in the restoration piece and you're, you know, after they're already saved. How are they saved or escaping from human trafficking? How is that typically
happening? So since this is an adult program, it looks very different than children that are trafficked and young teens that are trafficked. Mm-hmm. Because as an adult, you have to legally make an outcry to say I'm being held against my will, I'm being forced, you know, through force, fraud, and coercion, I'm being made to do these things. So we can't go in, even if we know, even if there is a girl in town that we see that we know is there against her will, that she's being trafficked, law enforcement and advocates cannot do anything until she makes an outcry. So
that's insane.
It's, yeah, and we're all fighting to change legislation to make more victim, legislation that advocates for victims, and not decriminalizing the act, because that opens up a whole new can of worms, right? Like, then it's like heyday. But decriminalizing the victims themselves is really what we're pushing for. So when these women get to this program, they have typically gone through a crisis center. They have gone through rehab, and then they come to this for a long-term program. There's a few different ways they come to us. One is, at this point, the average entry age to being sex trafficked is between the age of 12 and 15. So most of these women have been in the life for years, and they're tired. They want out. They're making outcries. They're old enough and wise enough to realize that they're not there by choice most of the time at this point. Not always. Sometimes we have people that come through the program and it takes months before they realize you didn't just have a mean boyfriend, right? Because that's a common thing. It's like, oh, I made some bad decisions. I did some drugs. I had a mean boyfriend. Yeah, he beat me. Yeah, he kept my money. Yeah, he made me do things I didn't want to do. So it takes like, it's crazy. It's crazy the mental games that are played in their heads to convince them sometimes that they're there by choice. But so after they come into our program, it's typically they're ready to exit the life and they are looking for help. They're sent to us through recommendations. There are different organizations and advocates that go into the jails and they speak with and sit down with the women in jails that have been arrested for prostitution. They build a relationship there. And the more they get to know these women, they're able to have the conversation where they say, you were arrested for prostitution, but let's look at the bigger picture. What was going on? Mm-hmm. And so after building that relationship and building that bridge, most times the lady will go ahead and make an outcry to the advocate at that point and say, yeah, you know, he's been holding me against my will and he threatened to kill my mom if I left him and he took all my money and he beat me when I left him. So, and I thought I was just helping him out because we needed some money, but actually he was forcing me to, you know, have sex for money and give him all the money. So at that point, the advocate will typically get in contact with our organization, and then our organization will work with the attorney on the case and have the girl be court appointed into the house at that point as part of her sentencing, because we still don't have a way to be like, oh, she was actually being trafficked. Can you throw that prostitution charge out the window? There's holes in the system, but we're working on them.
Yeah. Wow. It's such a in-depth topic,
mm-hmm. you know,
and it's like, I learned so much, and not being directly on the front line like you are, you know, I'm always learning so much about it. It's just unbelievable, kind of, you know, like you said, how accessible it is, how often it's happening, how the mind games, you know, it's just unbelievable. I'd like, since it is so related, I think, from our knowledge at least, how do you think the fashion industry is related to human trafficking and or sex trafficking?
So, I mean, obviously there's labor trafficking, right? Which is still mm-hmm. A basic violation of human rights. And the coalitions that I'm a member of fight child trafficking, sex trafficking, labor trafficking, all of it. Sex trafficking holds a more emotional toil and damage than the labor trafficking itself, but it doesn't necessarily make one worse or better over the other. So, for instance, I'm creating a hat company this year that hopefully will be up launched pretty soon, and it's a social enterprise to employ traffic.
The hat you're wearing?
No, the hat that I usually wear. I knew you were going to ask that. But the hat that I usually wear is back behind me on a hook.
So cute.
Yeah, but it's similar. Yeah, it's a similar hat. So, and so we're creating this as a social enterprise to employ traffic survivors. That's the whole purpose behind it. But I have to be really careful and say, okay, now where are my materials being sourced from? And who's the manufacturer? Because I can't be fighting sex trafficking and endorsing labor trafficking. So I think it's important to educate ourselves on all the working pieces. But as far as the fashion industry fueling sex trafficking, and I'm not a prude, right? But the over-sexualization of our society is fueling so heavily the sex trafficking industry. And, you know, porn is a driving factor of sex trafficking. And the fact that it's become the norm and that people are like, you know, he's going to watch it. My kid's going to watch it. They're going to see it. And we're not realizing, like, those are human beings that, P.S. and by the way, most of the time are being made to perform and do things they don't want to be. They're being trafficked, right? So I think it's a really slippery slope to be modeling, because the way that so many young girls get pulled into the sex trafficking industry, get pulled into porn, is through a false job offer. It's through a guy saying, I can make you a model. You're so pretty. And so while it's not the fashion industry's fault, but we have these high expectations and these beautiful, you know, women and men that are over-sexualized on magazine covers, and we see it on Instagram now, and you have young girls that know exactly how to pose. They know exactly how to make the face. Yep. They know what picture is going to get the likes on Instagram. And all it takes is one dude to reach out and say, hey, I think you're beautiful and you could be a model, and let's build a relationship here. And then that girl goes out to California or wherever. I'm not just like picking on California or wherever.
Yeah, don't pick on them.
Yeah, just there's just a few instances I know of, like that was the state that first came to mind. Sorry, guys. And so next thing you know, she's in a life of porn, because first it was, well, let's take some photos of you. Oh, well, can you take a few more clothes off for the photos? Oh, you know, it'd be really great if we had you on video. Oh, well, you can make this much money if you made this kind of a video. And so, yeah, it's the demand for sex from our society, like, as a whole.
Yeah. Wow. And it is so intertwined. It's It's such an interesting point, you know, that we tend to focus on, for us, tend to focus on if we're providing women with dignified work, they obviously they're not being labor trafficked, right? But then it also goes back to the point of sex trafficking. They won't be looking for this type of job. They won't be forced to do that type of job, prostitution or what have you, because there's other opportunities actually available. And we've just never even thought about where's that immediate need spinning from, right? We have talked on a recent episode about most of the people, I think we were talking with Kathy. She works with artisans in Bangladesh. And she was saying that most of the men are married men that are going to seek prostitution. So it's like you said, it's the need for sex and the demand is there. That's why it's so hard to stop it in general, you know?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, so places like Pattaya, Thailand. So I'm an A-team leader with A21, which is a global organization. And there's headquarters in Thailand and Bulgaria and Greece and all over the world. So I have a friend in Thailand that has really led the charge. And so Pattaya, Thailand is a destination, it's a tourist destination for sex, for sex with children. It is a hotspot for pedophiles. And so, A21's done major work with law enforcement there to get some legislation changed. But Westerners, Americans, literally travel across the world for this to be a destination. That's what they go there for. But even more shocking than that, I saw something the other day, and I'm certainly not going to quote statistics because I don't have them in front of me, but I saw something the other day about there is less, whereas in the past, there was more of travel for that, to go to these other countries for that. It's so readily available in the U.S. that it's become less of a thing. You don't have to go out looking for it. It's right in your backyard. And I have people so often ask, is it happening here, right? That's the question everybody wants to know. Small towns, you know, it's not happening here. And my answer is always, do you have one of these in your pocket? Because it's happening here all over the world. It's happening literally in your back pocket, in your phone. And most men that schedule appointments for an escort or any type of, you know, soliciting sex, most of them book the appointment between the hours of 1 and 3 on their work computer. So, I mean,
on their work computer.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of them are doing it from work in the afternoon hours. And so there's a ton of programs and a ton of organizations that are really trying to get to the root cause of taking the demand away, right? And educating men on what effect this has on them. Educating men about the porn that you consume is, you don't even have to look at it as someone's daughter. What is that doing to your mental state? How is that affecting your emotional state? How is that damaging you and your relationships? So there's some great, great organizations doing really amazing things for just interrupting the demand and really educating consumers of the truth and the reality of what's actually taking place.
Yeah. I have been doing Dresember. Do you know?
Yes.
Dresember,
yep.
The last 2 years. And I went to Dresember prom because since it's in L.A., and Christine Kane spoke there, who's the founder of A21. Yep. Have you met her before?
Yeah, she's awesome.
Oh, my God. She was so amazing. And she couldn't even she was making jokes because she couldn't read her speech because it was so dark in there. But she just went off and had no problem speaking in front of the crowd and was telling us just these, again, honestly, unbelievable stories about how these women were trafficked and just, I mean, I'm sure she has so many, but she was talking about how from, I think it was Kenya, but I could be wrong, but they were shipped in a shipping container. So originally 60 women were shipped in this shipping container, and then their oxygen was depleted somehow from them shipping, and only 30 of them survived. And then something, I forget the little details here, and then something else happened, and 25 of them drowned, and only 5 survived. And it's like these women just get tricked because we want other opportunities and we want to have something better. And then it's so horrible. It's that this is the world we live in. It's awful.
It really is. But I will tell you this, because in the beginning it just seemed like such a grand problem that I was like, this is huge and this is massive. And I don't know how we're ever going to like see change and impact this like at a really large level. I've been involved in this cause. Like it was put on my heart in May of 2017. I've been really actively involved since the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. So just a little over 2 years. And just in that time frame, I've seen huge, huge strides take place. I've seen it go from, I'm in Texas, and I've seen it go from being something that people in Texas hadn't heard of, didn't know about, didn't believe it was happening here, to a place where Texas is like leading the charge in the United States right now as far as spreading awareness and fighting trafficking and harder sentencing for traffickers. I've seen all of that take place to where that now we're focusing locally more on, we're not having to raise as much awareness now. Now we're really able to spotlight the restoration, and we're able to say, yes, this is dark, and yes, this is heavy, and yes, you don't want to talk about it because it's not rainbows and butterflies. But this survivor that just graduated my program a little over a year ago, not my program, obviously, a little over a year ago, is now, she's working at the national headquarters in Kentucky, and she's legislating, and she's down at the Capitol, you know, doing press releases and interviews. And so it is a big, heavy, ugly, glaring blemish on humanity, right? It's vile. It's terrible. But there's also like some really beautiful things coming out of the ashes. And I'm getting to witness that. I'm getting to see that. And I'm getting to say, even the ones whose success doesn't look like my friend Kim's that I'm talking about, even the ones who are still trying to find their way, I'm still getting to see beauty come out of that. I'm still getting to see them find self-worth. And I'm seeing big things happen in other countries with human trafficking. And I'm seeing lawmakers stand up and say, we're not going to turn a blind eye at this anymore. And there's a wave of not just awakening and awareness, and not just action, but there's a little more humanity rising out of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree with you on that. Well, two things I'd like to point out. We work with Elegant Tees, and they work with survivors of human trafficking in Nepal. Mm-hmm. And again, like sometimes I say that to customers and they're like, oh, and I'm like, but this is something beautiful coming out of the ashes, right? Like this is a beautiful story. So that's one thing I'd like to point out. But the other is that I've seen a lot of changes in San Diego as well. So I've been involved with Fair Trade. I've had the Golden Rule Boutique for the last 4 years, and January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, right? And this is the first year that I've actually seen events in San Diego. So there is, if anyone's in San Diego, there's a June Shine event. It's on the 25th. And then there is a, I'm forgetting the details, but there's a dinner about for a nonprofit as well, which I will be attending both. But in general, like that's, I've never seen that before. And that's huge for San Diego. So I'm excited to see that. And again, that's something that is changing, you know, that's exciting to help us make global changes. I'd like to ask you if you have, since you've been doing this the last 2 years, if you've changed any of your daily habits since you've been involved and started mentoring these women.
Yes. There are things that I never paid a lot of attention to. I see people in general as humans, like regardless of who they are. And I didn't grow up, I've never spent time in my life with people that have, you know, spent time in prison, with people who have records, with people who have been drug addicts. And to be able to see people through the lens of grace is the biggest thing that I've learned through this. To see people that are struggling, and instead of thinking like they're trash or they're worthless or, you know, they're a junkie or any of that, I'm able to see stories that I know in those people. I'm able to see stories that I know in the girl that's standing on the corner. I'm able to see stories that I know in the eyes of the man that is on the other corner. Like, just to be able to have true connections with people of all walks and all forms and know that, but for the grace of God, go I. I mean, just to see people. I think I see more people now. I think I see people that I wouldn't have seen before.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is such an amazing conversation that I think is going to be really insightful for a lot of our listeners. So thank you so much for being here. And I'm so glad that we made the connection.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. Thank you for taking your time out and being flexible with my schedule. It's been an honor. Thank you for just shining a light on, you know, the artisans that you feature and the fair trade that you are passionate about. It's all part of humanity. It's all part of holding our society to a higher standard. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. And can you tell us where our listeners can find you?
Sure. I am. All right. So y'all, I'm not really a millennial, even though I'm like on the verge of millennial. So I don't really love Instagram. I'm going to be totally honest. Like, I do it. It's part of the branding. I'm over on Instagram at Brandi Voth, BrandiVoth. The podcast itself is at the_Power Project. So you can check both of those things out. All my guests and episodes are on the Power Project podcast page on Instagram. Over on Facebook, I am at the Power Project Vlog. So you can find me over there. It's just the Power Project page. I have a community over there, the Power Squad. I don't know. I find it easier to talk with people and communicate with people on Facebook, but if you're on Instagram, I love you too, and I'll talk to you over there as well. And then the website is the-powerproject.com. You're going to find my blog there, my travel blog, my podcast, my speaking engagements, all the things, and my book's coming out, I believe, late March, early April. So that will all be posted on my website and my social media pages.
Here at the Fairlosophy Podcast, we recognize that we do not live in a bubble. We are all connected. There are people behind every product we shop for, and we can influence their lives when we vote with our dollar. If you like this episode, take a screenshot and share it on your social media. When you do, you'll be entered to win a giveaway that we will do live on Instagram once a month. Tag us and follow us at the Fairlosophy Podcast. Good luck.